Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
When the NFL schedules 49ers-Packers to kick off Week 9, they're thinking, okay, this is the rematch of the NFC Championship game.
Final score, the Packers 34, the Niners 17.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles, today's guests, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, ESPN NBA insider, Brian Windhorst, NBC horse racing analyst Eddie Olchek, plus actor Jeremy Piven. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes.
Come on.
TJ Jefferson, great putt to start the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show here on this very busy Friday in November 2020. I'm your humble host and excited to be here on this day. Let me do the math in my head. After counting every vote, still best dad ever.
Well, I'm going to be challenging that.
Still best dad ever. I mean, I've got the sign to prove it. How are you, Christopher? Good to see you.
Hey, Rich Eisen. It's a great day today.
It is a great day today because all reports out of the Northeast, Christopher, is you got the manager back that you wanted for your Boston Red Sox. Didn't think I would start the show with a little bit of baseball.
Is this studio big enough for me to take a victory lap? Because I believe I nailed that
one. You did. You said you wanted Alex Cora, and it looks like the Red Sox, all reports coming out, are going to hire Alex Cora back. So congratulations to that.
Thank you.
We saw a National Football League game go down last night. We saw Week 9 kickoff in San Francisco. I felt for the 49ers, man. I just felt for them.
Yeah.
And they were injured. They were without every single human being who advanced the ball from scrimmage in the Super Bowl. Not a single one was on the field last night. It's insane how they are injured with Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle placed on injured reserve, and then four guys on the COVID-19 list. Kendrick Bourne, we're still seeing if he had it was a false positive or not. Doesn't matter. There wasn't enough time to determine if it was a false positive or not. And Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams put on the COVID-19 list because they were close contacts. And so Nick Mullins, who was starting last night, didn't have much time. And Richie James, man, I don't know. To whoever had Richie James in your fantasy league starting last night, to salud, you know, I don't know if you knew he existed or if you're in that league. I'm in a 22-team league with five wideouts starting, and I had Richie James, and man, it was a PPR league, so tack on 9 points for the receptions that he had.
Dude, he got 30 points in my league last night.
What do you mean? Somebody had him?
No, nobody Come had him. Nobody had him, but that's how many he scored.
Well, I mean, that's the lone bright spot for the 49ers, who fell to 4-5. And I feel for them because the NFL is just going to be playing games when they have the opportunity now. You just got to take the games when they have the opportunity, even if you are severely underserved and underhanded, because you never know when a game needs to be pushed back due to COVID-19. The Bengals are the latest team to say that they've got two tests that came back positive. Frighteningly, from what I just saw on Twitter, based on a couple of reporters in the NFL media world, saying that a player on the Packers who played last night, I think Schefter just reported this, a Packer player who played last night had his test come back positive. So it's getting frightful out there. The Raiders lost a draft choice last night.
Forfeited a draft choice.
It's funny. The rest of the NFL calls it losing a draft choice. New Englanders call it forfeiting a draft choice. In the same way that the rest of the NFL calls it the tuck rule game, you call it the snow game. But yes,
accurate.
You did forfeit a draft choice in the Deflategate.
course.
That was the phrase that would, that paid from the NFL.
First round pick.
The Raiders lost a draft choice, a sixth round draft choice. The team was fined $500,000. Gruden had six figures taken out of his pocket for repeated violations of COVID-19 protocol. The Steelers got popped for $250,000, and Tomlin himself, $100,000 for not wearing a mask against the Ravens. So at least there's a mask mandate somewhere in the country, and it's the National Football League. Because if this season can't be completed, that's a problem. And COVID's getting to become a problem. I want to talk about it all with Albert Breer. Now then, Packers fans, I want to pay attention to you. Holy crap, man.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Nice bounce back game. I guess this is what happens when you don't have a 40-mile-an-hour wind in your face.
Right.
And there's nobody on the other side of the line of scrimmage who looks like Dalvin Cook. So, nice bounce back game for the Green Bay Packers, who are now, who got Aaron Jones out there. He looked pretty Aaron Jonesy.
I mean, they gave it to him on the first four plays of the game just to prove a point.
If you are missing out at all on this show over the last couple of days, I told you the story of Tyler Irvin, who did get some reps yesterday. It looked like he was going to get the start because Jamal Williams is out because he was a close contact of the COVID positive A.J. Dillon. So two of their Packers running backs of note were out last night. So Tyler Irvin got the start until Aaron Jones said, I can actually go. And they say, go ahead. And the story of Tyler Irvin was recounted with Steve Mariucci yesterday. The youngster with only 10 rushing attempts in his career going into the last night's game was the receiver of kickoffs for the Jacksonville Jaguars last year when Mooch was asking Doug Marrone on his board that he had in front of him to call a game that we were calling last year in London. Why isn't Tyler Irvin on kickoffs anymore? And Doug Marrone said, why do you keep asking me about that? What are you, his agent? Guy's not out there because he has trouble catching. Fun story. Reason why I bring it up right now, Tyler Irvin had not one but two catches last night. So, of course, I texted everybody in Game Day Morning Group. So he had a nice game. But Devontae Adams, look, we take credit for a lot here, right?
Oh, yeah.
We take absolutely. Credit for a lot, certainly when we're right, certainly when guests come on the show and do well. We call it the Rich Eisen Show bump. Has anybody had a better Rich Eisen Show bump than Devontae Adams in recent days?
They put up a graphic on last night.
On last week, before the game against the Vikings, he had three touchdowns. Yeah. And then last night, pretty good game for him, huh?
I'd say so.
Pretty good game for him.
Jeez.
And Aaron Rodgers keeps looking for him. And then when Adams is covered, Valdez-Scantling's out. I mean, this is why the Packers, whoever was in the building at the top of the flowchart argument that was reportedly going on about do we get Will Fuller or do we not, this is why you don't get Will Fuller. You got 12, and you got 17, and then you got 85, Robert Tonyan. Don't call me Tonyan. Rhymes with Funyan, Tonyan. You got him. Lazard's going to come back. R-E-L-A-X. Let Aaron do his thing. And certainly if you're going to have trouble covering Devontae Adams, you've got a problem. So
that means everyone's got a problem.
Everyone's got a problem. So the 49ers, man, feel for him big time. Jimmy G's not walking through that door. Neither is George Kittle. Neither is Raheem Mostert. Neither is Tevin Coleman. Big Nick Mullins had a problem last night. He is definitely not the future, folks. I'll tell you this. And he's been on the show, and he's a good kid, and he had a nice run last year. Yep. And he comes in, and he can do well. But then you start – I mean, it seems like every time Mullins is out there – he runs the offense in a nice, efficient way. And then all of a sudden, about a couple quarters later, it's like, where's C.J. Beathard? And then C.J. Beathard can come in the game and do very well or maybe play a couple games. And you're like, where's Nick Mullins? And then everyone in San Francisco is eventually going to be, when is Jimmy G coming back? Until he plays a couple games and you're like, where's Nick Mullins? And then it just seems to be a whole ready to come back around Thanksgiving. And we take a look at their record. Is it worth it? Blah, blah, blah. Keep him out, and then the rest of the offseason will be talking about him. Unfortunately for the 49ers, it does appear to be that's the rest of their season because they are that banged up, and it is not something that franchise deserves coming off of last year's Super Bowl. It's not even a hangover. Super Bowl hangovers are essentially like this team has spent the entire offseason, you know, smelling its own self and thinking that that they can get back and that they used every bullet last year and there's now a target on their back and they can't handle being everybody's Super Bowl every week and so on and so forth. That's the usual Super Bowl hangover. This team didn't have that. This team didn't have that. This team lost Richard Sherman before the season against Arizona, which went in and won a game in an empty stadium in the first game of COVID-19, and nobody knew how the hell to play a football game yet. No preseason. Week two, this team loses Bosa and Solomon Thomas for the rest of the season in one single game and lost Jimmy G in an injury while they're on the road in West Virginia to stay during weeks two and three because it was both at MetLife Stadium against the Jets and Giants. Then they come back and lose to Philadelphia, which was a desperate need of its first win. Then Miami comes in and boat races them, and then the Rams get hit in the mouth, and just when you thought that they were back, they go to New England and hit New England in the mouth, and then the roof caves in against Seattle with all the injuries and COVID-19. And Green Bay, a short week. Next up is New Orleans, then a bye, and I can only hope for them as they're sitting at 4-6, most likely on a bye, because I can't imagine they beat New Orleans in the Superdome with Big Nick Mullins or CJ Beathard, and with all due respect to Richie James. I feel for the 49ers, man. At the Rams, home for Buffalo, home for Washington, at Dallas, so they got that one. Sorry, TJ.
Wow.
At Arizona, home for Seattle. So you're looking at a team that might be under 500 when it's all said and done at 7-9, or they could be 8-8. That's not a playoff season. Then they'll go into the offseason, and we'll hear a lot about Jimmy G's our guy, potentially, or what's the future. You know, I think they should trade for Sam Darnold when he's available, because he will be.
Tom Kern's already talking about Jimmy G back to New England.
Well, that was the hot take that you were advocating for me. You were agitating
Brock
the other
Shady
day when I'm like, what's my fourth down hot take today? What do you think?
Brock Shady reported that last week.
Yeah,
so.
Right. You know,
he was on. My man was on that.
Yeah, they didn't credit me. It's fine.
Maybe everybody's looking for an off ramp. I don't know. Last night was tough to watch. I felt for Lynch.
Yeah.
Jed York, the rest of that franchise. Felt for him. And that's not what you want to be in the NFL for, is to be felt for. But Green Bay right now, big W, they are off the rest of this weekend, sitting back chilling, hopefully COVID-free. And Green Bay will have Jacksonville next, which means Chicago, you're on the clock, everybody. You better be you fast, because that division's going to start slipping away. And then the Rams and the Cardinals and the Bucks or Saints are going to eventually start to keep winning, whoever loses Sunday Night Football. Bears might be sniffing it for the rest of the season based on the way that everybody else is running. They might be sniffing it. They're currently atop the sniffing it list right now. And for those who are on the radio on Sirius XM or the Mightier 1090, our flagship station and our radio network terrestrially, we don't do in the hunt here for our playoff boards. It's sniffing it. Sniffing it. So, and we know what the it is. It's the playoffs. You're sniffing it. So that's my current look at everything. The Packers are the class of that division. Because the Bears can't. Bears will not be able to go point for point with this team. Because I'm assuming when the Packers and the Bears face each other for the first time on Sunday Night Football and our friends on NBC in week dozen, and then certainly see him in week 17 for potentially the marbles. I don't think it will be, based on the way that the Bears are looking offensively lately. I assume Lazard and everyone else will be back and ready to roll. So there's that. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We have got a busy show. Albert Breer of the MMQB is going to be first up from Sports Illustrated. So Albert will hit a lot of everything I just talked about with him. And then we're kind of be all over the map. Brian Windhorst from ESPN, who I love, he's my go-to guy when anything goes on in the NBA. He will be joining us because last night the old Board of Governors, NBA and NBA PA, came to an agreement, I guess. 3 days before Christmas is when the NBA says we're coming back. All right. What will that look like? And then, of course, the draft is right around the corner. What will that look like? Brian Windhorst will talk some hoops coming up in hour two. And then horse racing. Eddie Olczyk is going to join us. I think he's going to join us in your news segment, Chris.
Okay.
Because it's a big weekend on NBC. We've been talking about it. Starts with the Breeders' Cup Classic. That's tomorrow on NBC, leading to Clemson and Notre Dame. And then, obviously, Sunday night football between the Bucks and Saints with the NASCAR championship on Sunday afternoon. So Eddie Olczyk will be joining us to make us some money on the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Love it.
And then Jeremy Piven of Entourage fame, and for anybody who remembers him on the Larry Sanders Show, amazing. He's in a new film in theaters and on demand today called My Dad's Christmas Date. So he plays the role of the dad, and he better not come at my best dad ever design, I'll tell you that. He best not miss if he decides to come at this king.
Well done.
And then our usual higher register on Friday, where we got to go up here in order to believe what we're actually saying we believe. Got to go up here. Going to go higher register.
I like mine today.
Friday, I'll give you three. It's our Friday, usual Friday staples. I give you three NFL games on the schedule this weekend that's under the radar. Fewer people are talking about it than the marquee games like Sunday Night Football or, you know, Seattle taking on Buffalo is an early game that it's kind of even under the radar for the best record in the NFC taking on the team in the AFC East with the best record there. There's a handful of games on the marquee that not a lot of people are talking about right underneath. That's where I come in. Chris Brockman with Sneaky Good Games. So we're going to try and make you some money on the Breeders' Cup Classic with Eddie Olczyk. And then you're going to – I think you went 500 last week, correct?
Yeah, I was 2-2. I threw in the bonus college, so that got me to 500.
Correct. And so – and then we've got a great poll question, right?
We've got
a great poll question.
We do.
Do you want to unpack that right now, Chris?
Do you want to?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Okay, guys. I actually just threw up the best wide receiver one because we were talking about that pre-show.
Oh, okay.
Best wide receiver in the NFL, Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, DK Metcalf.
Wow. Let me get the exact quote here because I have it here. Devontae Adams was asked if he's the best receiver in the NFL last night. Quote, yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think that's not being conceited. That's just confident, end quote. All right, so we'll put it up there, right?
Hard to argue with
okay,
that one.
Right.
And then we have a really fun pop culture one today, guys. It's the 22nd anniversary of the release of The Waterboy.
Wow, it's really that long?
I know. 1998.
Didn't we used to have Bobby Boucher's helmet here in studio?
Yeah.
But then we gave it back to Sandler.
We did. We had that around here somewhere. Bobby Boucher. So this is our poll today. Which fictional football player would you take first overall in the NFL draft? Fictional football player first overall in the draft. And if we left some out, give us a call, 844-204-RICH.
I like
here
it.
Here are our choices. Bobby Boucher.
Yes.
Johnny Utah.
From Point Break.
Willie Beeman.
Any Given Sunday. I like it. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Forrest Gump.
Yes. Yes.
He was an All-American, Alabama, kick returner, kind of did everything.
Fastest guy on the screen.
Easily the fastest guy. I mean, if the Raiders have the number one pick, I think Forrest
fastest
Gump
guy on
goes
the screen.
First. But which fictional football player would you take first overall in the draft?
Forrest Gump, right? I mean...
Boucher, Utah, Beeman,
hey, if we,
Gump.
Forrest Gump was Devin Hester before Devin Hester.
He was, but like
you
I said...
You couldn't kick it to Forrest Gump.
Like I said earlier, you know, when we were talking about this last night and this morning, Forrest Gump's Wonderlic tests are going to make him drop down the ladder. I'm just saying. You know how none of these scouts think? Forrest is going to drop because of that. That's all I'm pointing out.
What you're saying is that moment where... Forrest asks Jenny, the son that he did not know he had, who turned out to eventually in movie history see dead people.
He sure did.
Okay. Where he asks Jenny, is he smart? Which is one of the most touching.
Oh my gosh.
I'm almost tearing up
I know,
recounting
it, really gets
you. One of the most touching moments in movie history. And that alone could have gotten Hanks the Oscar for that role.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying in the heartless world of football evaluation.
Look, man.
That doesn't matter.
It's a cold world. It is a cold world.
Wow.
Wow.
But the story he tells in pre-draft interviews.
Look, I mean, I'm a Forrest combine. Fan. I'm thinking not as TJ Jefferson. I'm thinking as Scott.
Wow.
He's got to evaluate
that
this guy.
That is cold.
Talent evaluator.
Scene where he asks Jenny, is he smart?
Ugh. Man.
Or is he like, he can't even finish the sentence, or is he like, I'm tearing up right now.
Yeah, it's tough.
It hits. By the way, do you feel differently now that you have a son now, right?
Hits me differently.
Right? Are you crying at commercials now?
Ugh.
He doesn't watch commercials.
Yes, he does.
It's bad. I just look at him and start crying.
I'm not laughing at Folgers commercials. All right, look that one up for if anybody missed that story earlier this week. Let's take a break. Albert Breer will be first up. 844-204-RICH, number to dial to call us on anything that we've just unpacked right here on this Friday edition of The Rich Eisen Show.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
And we're not even showing you the Breeders' Cup Classic that starts rolling at 2:30 Eastern, coverage from Kentucky. Eddie Olczyk's going to be joining us later on in hour three to hit you up on all that, try and make you some money. And then that leads to Clemson Notre Dame 1-4 and all new Saturday Night Live. Who's the host and the musical guest?
Oh, I believe it's Chappelle and Dave Grohl this weekend.
Fantastic. Two fantastic Daves from pop culture, right?
Absolutely.
NASCAR crowns a champion in Phoenix 3 Eastern Sunday, and then Saints Bucks. I mean, just put it on NBC and rip the old knob off this weekend.
You know what's funny? Chappelle did the first SNL after the last presidential election.
Is that right?
Yeah, he did that Saturday.
Maybe that's what they do.
It's a
tradition unlike any other. Speaking of which, the Masters is around the corner.
Next weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
What's that going to look like? We can talk about this another time, but daylight savings. Like, I'm going to have to tee off early, right?
Early tee time.
Back here on our radio network, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We're just talking about the Masters is coming up next week. And with daylight savings, it's going to be, you know, they better get up early there in Augusta. But that's for another day. Another day. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Your phone calls await. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show, a good friend of mine, friend of the program from Sports Illustrated, the MMQB, Albert Breer, back here on the show. How are you, Albert?
I'm good, Rich. Yeah, the Masters next weekend, and I believe LSU Alabama is next weekend too, right? Like, we're hitting kind of a sweet spot as far as all rescheduling.
That has all the makings of boat race, though, doesn't it, though?
Yeah, I mean, like, that isn't what it used to be, I guess, but I think you still have to have your radar up somewhat, right? Like, if something weird could happen there.
Right, and then obviously Clemson Notre Dame will be without Trevor Lawrence this week. What are you hearing about Trevor Lawrence these days, Albert? Front and center.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I think, you know, and I'll use the four names. I think I've probably used them with you before. John Elway, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's, you know, really over the last 2 years, I've been able to kind of put together a pretty clear picture. That's how the NFL sees him right now. Now, they still have to study him and all that different stuff, bring him in. You know, just as far as how he's seen from an NFL standpoint, that's the kind of player we're talking about. And so, you know, I think it's going to be really, really interesting over the last 2 months of the season. I think right now, Rich, we have 11 teams with two or fewer wins, which is a lot. And so, you know, you sort of wonder, could there be some interesting roster management down the stretch? And I'm not saying teams are going to tank, but, you know, I think we saw some of it with the Colts in 2011 after they lost Peyton Manning. Like, at the very end of that season, the way they were handling certain positions, it's going to be really interesting. So I think this is as good as some of the prospects we've seen coming in the league the last few years are at that position. You know, just the sense I've gotten is that this one's completely different. So it's a shame that we don't get to see him against Notre Dame on Saturday.
I agree.
Much, much better days to come for Trevor Lawrence.
Well, I'll also let you pound the table for your guy, who will be a heck of a, if you will, consolation prize. It'd be a heck of a silver medal Is it possible it goes Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields atop the draft next year, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the likelihood now based on how he's played. Now, it's only 2 weeks, so we'll see. And I know, like, the NFL scouts wanted to see more, but, you know, the early kind of returns I've gotten is that he's got a chance to be better than a lot of guys who went first overall. You know, like, so, you know, probably comparable to Joe Burrow if he has a great year. Maybe a little bit better than maybe a little bit more highly thought of than a Kyler Murray or a Baker Mayfield, just because he's got the prototypical size coming out. So he's definitely in that category of guys who have gone first overall, just, you know, physically with what he can do. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, the most interesting thing about this, Rich, to me is, like, how many teams would be willing to throw young quarterbacks overboard to draft Trevor Lawrence, right? Like, so, and I think there's a lot of them that would. Like, I think the Jets would trade Darnold. I think the Giants would trade Jones if Trevor Lawrence was sitting there on their doorstep. I think then the question becomes, what if one of those teams is drafting number two? So, you know, I think just from that standpoint, it's going to be such an interesting draft cycle in that we could have, like, a little bit of a game of musical chairs with some of the young quarterbacks, because these two guys, and maybe Trey Lance too, we'll see, are really, really highly regarded.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. What machinations were going on behind the scenes, best you can tell, about last night's game and whether it should be played and why it was played? The 49ers were so understaffed.
Yeah.
Was there any conversation about pushing the game? What can you tell me about it, Albert?
Yeah, I mean, the naked truth here, Rich, is that, you know, the goal is to get 256 games played in 17 weeks. And to get those games played on time. And, you know, if you can play, because the problems could get worse. And I think that that's something that you've heard pretty consistently from some of the teams, is that, you know, if you wait, what happens if it spreads more? What happens if you've got further problems, you know? And so, you know, I think that's what we're going to see the rest of the year, really, is that as these problems pop up, you know, the question's going to be, can you field, you know, 46 guys to dress on game day? And if you can, then we're probably going to go forward with it. And I think that this is really, if you want to turn the clock back to the summer, you know, really this is sort of why I think, you know, some of the teams, the coaches, the GMs were frustrated with the league was, well, we want like some sort of barometer. We want you to tell us what it's going to take to move a game or cancel a game. And the NFL wanted to maintain flexibility. So Roger Goodell, you know, has a committee that he works with on these sorts of things, on these decisions. You know, but I do think that that's part of the frustration that, you know, the teams have had on this, is that, well, what is the barometer? What would cause you to move a game? What would cause a cancellation? And really, that's just sort of been they've dealt with things on a case-by-case basis, is the best way to put it.
Well, you know, and the NFL kind of is mirroring our society with COVID-19 now back-to-back days affecting six figures of new Americans being diagnosed with the virus. And we're assuming today will be day three in a row of it. And it just seems more and more teams fewer and fewer teams are able to say we're COVID free.
Right.
And so what is the NFL doing? Is that part of the reason why we're seeing the fines towards the Raiders and the Steelers, respectively, Albert?
Yeah. So, like, I think the reason you're seeing the protocol strengthened and some of the teams maybe acting with even more caution than they did at the beginning is because, you know, that the focus right now is on getting the games played. And, you know, from a business standpoint, if you want the kind of cold look at it, that's where it is everybody wants to get paid, right? Like the owners want to get paid, the owners want to make their money, and then the players want to get paid. And so, you know, I think just such a huge part of this is can we play the game safely or not? And take the competitive thing out of it, like whether it's fair that the Niners had to go without Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams last night, like, can we play the game? And if we can play the game, let's play the game, because that's the way everybody's going to make money. Now, if we're talking about, like, you know, there's being a risk of spread, now we're talking about something else. But if they feel like they can do it safely, they're going to do it. And I think, you know, the same thing goes for all the lead up, you know, like, so I think it's just sort of become one of those things where it's like a day of practice isn't worth risking playing the game on Sunday. So if we think there's some sort of risk on the building on Wednesday or Thursday, we're going to shut down to make sure that we can play the game on Sunday. And so, you know, I mean, Rich, me and you talked, like, I think every day during the lockout in 2011.
Yes.
Wise man back then told me that the best way to cover these things is always to follow the money. I think following the money can take you a long way in understanding why they're operating the way they're operating right now.
Well, I mean, and then taking money from teams is significant. But, I mean, we saw draft choice removed from Mike Mayock's arsenal, a sixth-round draft choice. And does that mean if they get caught again, it's going to be a higher draft choice? I mean, what is going on? What happened with the Raiders?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. You would think so. And I think part of it is, like, to everybody, it was, you got your warning shot with the Titans, right? Like, we threatened penalties against the Titans. And so everybody, like, look at that. Like, it's going to be tougher the next time. And so I think any sort of violations that happened after what happened in Tennessee were going to be dealt with more harshly. I think one of the reasons why, you know, they eased up a little bit than I think they initially intended to go on the Titans was, well, you know, I think the feedback they were getting from a lot of the teams was, like, you don't understand what it's like on the ground. You don't understand how hard it is, like, to do certain things under these protocols. You don't understand how this is wearing on the players. And so I think that they were understanding in the Titans case of some of the challenges that exist. Like, my understanding was in the Titans case, like, mask, like, compliance, it wasn't a mess, but it was, like, 80%, which isn't good enough, right? And so, you know, I think the league just sort of reinforced, okay, here's what's important. And we're going to let the Titans go with a fine. But if anybody else is, you know, really violating what we say is important, which is distancing and mask wearing, we're going to come down really hard on them. And so, you know, I think you see the Raiders, they lose all those players over the course of the last couple of weeks. And the league really felt like they had to send a message to everybody else.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Which rumor that constantly gets I mean, it's now 2-3 years running, and one of them, even with a quarterback taking a team to the Super Bowl, which one has more smoke than fire or vice versa? Which one is real or more real? Odell and the Browns just can't get on the same page. He's played his last snap there. Or Jimmy G isn't the right guy in San Francisco. What do you got for me, Albert? Neither of those go away.
The new general manager in Cleveland, Andrew Berry, is very conscientious about value, and I don't think they're going to sell low on Odell. And if you look at his contract versus what guys are getting paid now, it's actually matured into a little bit of a bargain for the Browns. So I don't think there's any need to throw him overboard when you're not going to get very good value for him. So, you know, and I think Andrew Berry is being forthright when he said publicly over the last couple of weeks that they're going to stick with Odell. So I think that the likelihood is that he's in camp with the Browns next year. I think with Jimmy G, I don't think it's that they want to get rid of him. Here's what I would tell you on Jimmy G. I think it's instructive looking at the Tom Brady situation in March as far as his future in San Francisco. And what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and all those guys did was, you know, word got to them through a member of their staff that Tom Brady wanted to go there. So they went and they investigated Tom Brady. They spent a couple days looking at film of Brady. They came to the conclusion this guy can still play. This guy's still got bullets left in the chamber. So then the exercise was, let's go look at Jimmy. Let's go break down all of his tape. And they went back and for a couple days looked at all of Jimmy's tape. And at the end of that, they came to the conclusion we're sticking with Jimmy. Now, that tells you two things. Number one, they like Jimmy Garoppolo. Two, they're open to looking at upgrades. And so I think that Jimmy Garoppolo's future in San Francisco isn't going to depend so much on what Jimmy G is. It's going to be whether or not they can get an upgrade. And so I think that their eyes are wide open as to whatever might be an upgrade in 2021, whether it's, I don't know, Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, Trey Lance in the draft, Sam Darnold, who I think that they really liked coming out. Like, if there's an option that they see as an upgrade out there, I don't think they're going to hesitate. But I don't think we're going to just throw Jimmy G overboard for no reason.
Well, while I'm stirring up a poop storm, we might as well go all the way in because this is what we talked about over the last couple of days, including even in our first segment. What about New England taking him back next year? What do you think about that idea?
I don't think it's impossible. I mean, I can tell you Bill really likes him. You know, I mean, and everything you heard about, like the Niners calling and talking to the Patriots about Jimmy – in the spring of 2017 and being told he is flat out not available is true. I think Jimmy only really became available. Jimmy only really became available because of the logistics with Brady, and because, you know, I think it became clear to Bill that he wasn't going to be able to trade Brady. And so it made sense for him to get value for Garoppolo when he could. That said, I mean, like, you know, I think that they're, at the very least, I think Jimmy G could come in and be a nice bridge for them. And I've brought up this example the last few weeks with several quarterbacks. I think it applies to Jimmy, Derek Carr in Vegas too. You know, I think if you brought Jimmy in New England, at the very least, he could be Alex Smith for you in Kansas City. And what that means, Alex Smith was a really good quarterback there for 5 years, right? Got them to the playoffs in 4 of those 5 years. And what he did was he bought Andy Reid and that group time to build the roster up and wait until they saw one that they thought was truly special. And then when they did, they got really aggressive and went and got Patrick Mahomes. And so I just think that, like, Jimmy in San Francisco, Derek Carr in Vegas, like, they're sort of, I think, in those position, in that sort of position with their team. And I think if the Patriots went and got Jimmy, it would be to put him in that sort of position so they could be patient finding whoever the long-term answer might be.
Last one for you, Albert Breer. If it wasn't such a major marquee matchup between two GOATs atop the quarterback lists of whatever metrics you want to use to measure greatness, if it wasn't Brady versus Breeze, we'd be talking about it's Antonio Brown's game back on Sunday Night right. Football. So let's dwell on that a little bit. As if this thing couldn't get a little bit stranger, Tony Robbins gets thrown into the mix, apparently, is the one who's straightening out Antonio Brown. How did this all come about, and how do you think it's going to play out, Albert?
Well, I think, you know, Tom's, like, kept in touch with him, like, which everybody knows. He's kept in touch with Brown over the last year. And, you know, obviously Bruce Arians has a background with Antonio, having – had him from 2010 to 2012 in Pittsburgh. And so, you know, I think part of this is, I think the Bucs promise to Brady, right? Like, so part of the reason why he got frustrated in New England is he didn't feel like they were always aggressive enough in putting people around him. And they were still winning. So it's not like there was a bad team around him. But, you know, if you're competitive as Brady is about your team performance, you're also going to be competitive about your individual performance. And I think he felt like his individual performance was suffering at times because the Patriots weren't aggressive enough in putting talent around him. So part of the Bucs' promise of bringing him in was, we are going to be aggressive. When we see opportunity, we're going to strike. And what have they done, Rich? I mean, like, look at it. Rob Gronkowski in April, they go and they bring in Shady McCoy, Leonard Fournette, when those guys become available. And now Antonio Brown's out there, his suspension's ending, and they go and get him. So I think a huge, huge part of this is going to be is their promise to Brady. But now I think it flips around a little bit where it's like, this is the guy you wanted, so now this is on you. And so it's going to be really interesting because I do think, I mean, going all the way back to what happened in New England, Brady's really invested in this guy. And, I mean, one thing we know, he's never had an issue staying in shape. He's never had an issue performing on Sunday. And so if the other stuff's taken care of, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how Brady kind of gets the most out of him, because I think it helps him now. But I think it also, there's like also that little, you know, and I think you know where I'm going here, Rich. There's also that little, like, I told you so part of this, that mm-hmm. he can kind of throw back at the Patriots, which might be a little bit of a side benefit.
Yeah, I know that, but let's be honest, just to be fair and balanced here, and not saying what you just said was unfair or unbalanced. But the Patriots did bring Antonio Brown in after the whole frostbite right. feet, no. helmet, you know, the weird yep. videos that we saw all throughout his stay in Oakland. I gotta get it all straight in my head. You know, at training camp in Napa, they did bring him in, and he did yep. catch a touchdown pass, and he was getting ready to hopefully lead them with Brady back to the Super Bowl. Until Robert Klemko, for your publication right. and website, with a great report about another,
yep.
what's the best word for it, I guess, or the least unsavory might be
terrible, whatever you want to
exactly.
say.
Exactly,
yeah.
I mean,
any adjective.
So that, and then when the Patriots took him off the field, he starts. going at Robert Kraft. I mean, the Patriots could be like, well, we tried. I mean, what else do you want us to do?
So,
they have every
right to say that, no question. And like, look, like there's a lot of things that Robert Kraft said over the years about these sorts of offenses where he would look like a hypocrite if he didn't get rid of him, right? And remember, like he took, like Antonio Brown took aim at Robert Kraft himself.
Yes,
too. Like,
right.
And, like so, like I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. I'm not trying to tell you like this thought like would be rational,
right.
But you also know the way these guys operate, right, Rich? Like any little thing that they need to kind. I think part of this, I mean, for both Brady and Bill, like part of this is of this whole thing is I want to show what a big part of the last 20 years I was, you know, what an enormous part. I'm the main part of the last 20 years. I think there's a little side benefit for both those guys in whatever happens from here on out. And, you know, part of it might be going and winning with Rob Gronkowski, going and winning with Antonio Brown, going and winning with guys that didn't quite fit into what the Patriots were doing. I mean, Gronk at the end, you know, was frustrated with everything that had happened in New England. He was worn out, you know, so bringing him back in, I think there's an element of that. And certainly with Antonio Brown, you know, I do know like Brady wishes that the Patriots had stuck with him a little bit longer. And again, like that's with me saying, me personally, Rich saying, like, it was 100% justified the way the Patriots acted in that case.
Last one for you, Albert. Ask him the pop culture poll question, Christopher, going out the door here on this Friday. Go for it, Chris.
All right, Albert, it's the anniversary of the Waterboys release. So which fictional football player would you take first overall in the draft? Bobby Boucher, Johnny Utah, Willie Beeman, or Forrest Gump?
Can I do a write-in?
Yes, please. This is great.
Write-in?
Yeah.
Okay, write-in. Joe Kane. Do you guys know who that is?
From the program. I wanted to put Alvin Mack on the list.
Yeah, Alvin Mack. Latimer, like, I don't know if Latimer would pass a drug test at the combine, so that might be a little bit of a problem, right?
Good one.
So I don't know if you can take him. Darnell Washington was good, too, but, like, running back, not really a value position. But Joe Kane? Like, there's a little bit, like, he was, like, from Western Pennsylvania, right? Like, there's a little Dan Marino going on there back in the day, and I think he wore 13 also. So
Joe Kane, height issue.
Joe Kane.
Joe Kane, though, kind of Breeze-esque. He was only, like, 6 feet tall.
Well, I mean, that's it's not like...
That's true.
Everybody's got a knock. Everyone's got a knock.
Yeah,
but
that's
true. I
mean... And the slogan, the Heisman slogan was perfect. Kane is able.
Kane is able. That's right. Well, I'll tell you what. Great hey, movie. Look, Chris, the Browns chose Baker Mayfield first overall,
good
and
point.
He's, you know, 6 feet. So
well, that
never
hasn't
know.
Worked out, though.
Oh,
he definitely. Hey, Joe had some of that Baker Mayfield moxie now.
For
that's
sure.
True. I'm just saying. Albert, thanks for the call. Have a great Friday
right.
and weekend. Always great to chat with you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.
That's Albert Breer.
See you, buddy.
We'll take the phones. There is news on Kendrick Bourne. Yesterday, Adam Schefter tweeted out how Kendrick Bourne, after he tested positive and then negative, said that 104 instances had happened earlier this season so far where somebody tested positive and then negative. 101 of the 104 times the next test was positive to confirm the first one was, in fact, real, not false. So when we come back, we'll let you know if Kendrick Bourne is the 102nd player to test positive again or the fourth player to test negative for a second time. And then your phone calls at 844-204-RICH and higher register when we come back.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah.
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who?
We'll start this thing off. Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
I'm really enjoying this poll question today, Christopher, and we're just
It's well done.
It's blooming like a rose here as we've We've got some great production elements to unveil on this front, as in draft boards for all four of these guys. Fantastic. Brian Windhorst is going to be joining us in hour two to talk about hoops. Coming back December 22nd. This is when the NBA should start every year.
Christmas?
Yes.
Christmas-ish.
I know they you know, it's me telling them, yeah, go with less money in October and November.
Yeah. I think this year the date seems a little early.
I think so too, but we'll talk to Windhorst about that coming up in hour number two. I think so exactly too. Yeah. We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. So yesterday, when Kendrick Bourne, the wide receiver of the San Francisco 49ers, tested negative a day after he tested positive, and there was a lot of conversation, would the NFL and the NFLPA change their protocols because it's a Thursday night game? And not only did Kendrick Bourne test negative after testing positive and be asymptomatic, but it put two other healthy players on the COVID-19 list as close contacts, thus ineligible to play tomorrow last night. And those were their other healthy wide receiver, because Deebo Samuel, who was also a close contact, he was already out. Brandon Ayuk, the rookie, who Nick Mullins could have used, and Trent Williams, the left tackle, who Nick Mullins could have used last night. The concept was like maybe they could just, you know, rapid test him in the morning, and if he was negative, put them all out there. And the NFL and the NFLPA said no. And the reason why, as Adam Schefter pointed out, was that 104 times this year a player tested positive and then negative right after. And then the next test of the player, 101 of the 104 times came back positive. So the false positive is a rarity. Kendrick Bourne, according to Mike Garofolo of my network, NFL Media Group, says that Kendrick Bourne's test just came back today negative. So he is now the fourth instance of a player to test positive and then negative twice in a row. And through that, it appears that Ayuk and Williams are going to be taken off of the COVID-19 list. And I'm sure the 49ers are like, now you tell us.
This game could have been postponed.
No, but as Breer said, you can't run the risk. Like, it's a snapshot. Kickoff is a snapshot in time. And if that snapshot in time says you can go, you got to go. Because it could have been positive again today, and then you delayed it, and now suddenly more players are not. Although Green Bay, as we know, had a player last night test positive today and thus was playing potentially COVID positive last night. It's just, there's no good way about it, man. I just wonder, you know, knock on wood, we get to the Super Bowl, what's going to happen then? Like, they better get these tests back day of, like swab up the nose,
like,
on Super Sunday.
15 minutes,
swab
like
up the nose Super Sunday. And the problem is, swab up the nose Super Sunday and it comes back your quarterback is positive. What happens then? I don't even want to think about it. But it's better than having, hey, Tom Brady's removed from the game in the second quarter because we just found out that he's positive, a la Justin Turner.
I mean,
right?
That is absolute worst case scenario. Blaine Gabbert has to play in the Super Bowl now? Like, come on.
Dude, I don't know what to tell you. What would they do? I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
It's a good day. It's a positive day.
It's a good day. Positive day.
Let's breathe in and breathe out. Relax and let go.
Mm.
That's the that's my meditation for the day. We've got all sorts of great poll questions today. Chris, unpack both of them one more time. And then we'll take a couple phone calls on it.
Okay, so based on Devonta Adams, huge last few weeks for the Packers, said he is the best wide receiver in the NFL. So let's ask you, who is the best wide receiver in the NFL right now? Devonta Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, DK Metcalf. All due respect to Julio Jones, we just left him off.
Okay. Michael Thomas has played only one game this year. I guess you could put him on there. It's too late. It's already left.
Right now, the way I worded the poll, right now.
All right, so
these are the three best.
Okay.
And then our pop culture one today is awesome. Anniversary of The Waterboy, 22 years ago today. Remember watching that in the theater in Syracuse. Wow, such a great movie. Which fictional movie football player would you take first overall in the NFL draft? Fictional. Fictional is key for the people calling about Booby Miles. He was a real person.
Yes.
Bobby Boucher, Johnny Utah, Willie Beeman, Forrest Gump. Remember, Gump had speed. All-American.
Gump had speed.
All-American.
World-class speed.
Went to the White House. Drank all the Dr. Peppers.
All right, let's go. And so 844-204-RICH, number to dial. I guess we've forgotten some. Wes in Seattle, you're on the show. How you doing, Wes?
Good, Rich. Thanks. So I don't know if you remember that commercial. I think it was a Reebok commercial. Cherry Tate, office linebacker.
Yes.
That have to be my pick. That guy was relentless.
Well, plus he would definitely keep the locker room in line, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the ones that people like cooking fish in the microwave, and he just wasn't having it. So I got all the respect for him.
Cherry Tate, office linebacker. That is a great one.
That's great.
Well done, Wes, in Seattle. Well done indeed. I forgot that one. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let us go to Eric in Los Angeles. What's up, Eric?
Hey, what's going on, Rich?
How are you, Eric?
I'm doing all right, man. So I was going to say Booby Miles, but then I have two little sleepers for you.
Go for it.
I have Icebox from the Little Giants. She was just a beast.
Nice.
And then I have the caller before me just reminded me of, do you remember those old commercials with Leon? And Leon, I forget what his name was.
Sandcastle?
Leon Sandcastle. That's Dion.
No, not Sandcastle. Oh. Not Dion. But okay. It was like a Nike commercial or something. And he was like really arrogant. And like, Leon doesn't go in the games. Leon doesn't do this.
Okay.
I forget.
Well, we got Google here. We'll look it up for you. I don't recall that one, but I appreciate that. Leon Sandcastle, by the way, I think.
Leon Sandcastle.
I think he might. I think
Jerry Rice Cake.
I think he did. Thanks for the call. I think he did go number one overall. When it all came down
to the Chiefs or something?
I'll tell you what. When Dion showed up at my 40-yard dash.
That was a really funny campaign.
As Leon Sandcastle. And ran backwards the first 20 yards, stride for stride with me, with a full-on fake afro. And then he flipped his hips because he's Deion Sanders and then jogged the rest of the way to beat me. Not a good moment. Although, just when you think I'm not thinking about my 40-yard dash, John, could you put up that meme that I sent you? You know, I'm just scrolling through. I'm doom scrolling just like everybody else on Twitter yesterday. Yeah. All these Nevada is counting slow memes got personal yesterday when this one showed up in my timeline. The state of Nevada on my chest if Nevada was a 40-yard dash. Well done. My kids loved this one. They enjoyed this. If Nevada was a 40-yard dash. Yeah, I get it. I'm slow. I get it. I'm not a fictional football character anymore.
You're not.
Real.
You're a real person,
I'm real.
Rich. You are real.
You do know John Elway, once upon a time, did have me at the top of their draft board. They did put me on their draft board in Denver at the top. And I was a high-character guy. That was my best attribute.
I got to think you would score high on the Wonderlic as well.
I did take the Wonderlic once.
Yeah.
That ain't easy, by the way.
You get 12 minutes,
oh,
15,
my God. I didn't even want to know my score.
Weren't you on the Cardinals draft board, too?
Well, I was in the draft room. They just have me as inspiration. Steve Keim puts a photograph of me up there as inspiration.
Just to remind them that they can't teach
speed. You can't teach what's inside.
I feel you, dog.
It's not speed. It's what beats inside. You
the
either wake up and see it in the mirror or you do not. Okay, our radio audience, Brian Windhorst coming up next hour to talk about some hoops. Higher Register is coming. I said that very Nancy-ian.